Hey everybody, welcome to Insight Nature versus Nurture with yours truly. This is Neil. I'm here solo. There will be no Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse this evening. This evening's podcast was slated to be Ask Neil. So essentially, Greg, Ben, and Joel were going to ask me questions that they had specifically regarding nutrition and lifestyle. That won't be going on tonight. I felt it important, as we all did, to get this podcast out in lieu of summer happenings getting in the way of us coordinating a podcast. So anyway, here we go. What I really want to address, and it was a topic a few podcasts ago regarding nutrient timing, nutrient partitioning, mitochondrial nutrition. Like, there's all kinds of different terms that are being whispered amongst the experts, and the information is coming this way. I was online today, and one of my Insight members had sent me a video by a person by the name of Thomas DeLauer. Now, Thomas DeLauer is one of he's a YouTube sensation. He's a physique competitor, fitness model, but he's got a head on his shoulders. He really is scientifically and research driven. He has his own YouTube channel and talks about some very cutting edge stuff. And he goes into quite a bit of detail regarding the science behind it. And he's usually been at the forefront of a lot of these things. He has his finger to the pulse, as I like to believe I do as well. I've been talking for the last probably 3 years, hitting on this topic and doing it not like a jackhammer, but doing it very, softly, as to not drive it down people's throats prematurely. But regarding this whole new information that's heading this direction regarding the combination of our foods and how that's affecting our absorption of these foods and how it's affecting our body's ability to use it. You guys know that obesity, which is a symptom of chronic illness, it's one of the side effects to not being optimal, actually is a symptom of malnutrition. So there's a lot of things happening in our lives and in our bodies that are really conducive to us not breaking our foods down and absorbing them properly. Again, I'll refer back to my tagline, you are not what you eat, you are what you absorb. So we're eating a lot of food, but we're not getting a lot from the food. And like a conversation, you could say a lot, but really not understand a lot, you know, because there's two aspects to every conversation. There's the person talking, the person listening. So information without comprehension is useless. So our food in essence isn't being comprehended. It's not being absorbed into our body. And I feel for the longest time that we've been focusing too much on the food as opposed to how the body actually absorbs it. And now we're getting into that subject. Now I'm starting to see hints of it. In courses and talks that I've given over the last 3 years, I've been hinting to people that this is information that's 3 years, even as many as 5 years before it hits mainstream. And now with Thomas coming out with it, it's hitting mainstream. It's going to be the thing that people are going to be looking at in 2021 regarding their diet, because the beauty behind it is that it doesn't exclude any nutrient. It's not anti-carb. It's not anti-fat. It's not anti-protein. It's about how do we introduce these foods so that the body can absorb them better, right? If you have if you shit timing and you walk up to someone and they're aggravated and, you know, their head spinning a million miles a second and you try to give them information, it's going to be inflammatory. They're not going to take it in, right? You've got poor timing. Same way as if you have poor timing when you're telling a joke and, you know, you screw up the punchline. Timing is everything. And with the body and this whole circadian rhythm is the 24-hour clock that your body runs on based on your time zone, waking, sleeping hours, you know, the elevation and the raising and rising and setting of the sun. So all of this hasn't been factored into our diet. It's always been, you know, eat when you get up, eat at 8 o'clock in the morning, eat at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, eat at 5 o'clock at night. And we've had a lot of shift workers. We've had more disruption from that than we've had benefit. You have countries and cultures that eat at, you know, 9 o'clock at night, the restaurants don't even open. You have cultures that have, you know, breakfast later in the morning. They don't eat heavily in the afternoon because of the heat. Anyway, the list goes on. But what I'm getting at is that we have been programmed to eat a certain way without being looked at as, okay, well, what is optimal for the human being, as opposed to what is optimal for controlling a 9-to-5 work schedule and making sure that all the employees are where they should be. How do we optimize their work day instead of how do we optimize their health? How do we optimize their life? How do we give the body what it needs when it needs it so that it can do what we're asking it to do? And over the last, you know, 5 decades, we've been seeing our health decline because of that fact, because we haven't asked the body what it needs, and we're not giving the body what it needs when it needs it, and the body is starting to break down because of it, and we're seeing the long-term effects. It does what it can with it, with what it has. You know, in the military we call it jerry-rigging. It's, you know, we're living a duct tape life. It's a duct tape health. We're just barely holding on and holding it together. So what this brings about, or what this identifies, is, okay, you have a circadian rhythm. The example that I use to best explain it to people is that in the evening when you go to bed, say if you have a fever, or if you're fighting a virus, the fever tends to present itself in the evening, okay, because that's indicative of the body actually fighting, the immune system ramping up and getting down to business. So the body actually goes to work. Same with a sunburn. When you have a sunburn, the sunburn tends to peak and present itself in the evening. Again, that's your epithelial layer and the cells starting to heal. Same way with a bug bite or an abrasion or laceration. Those things tend to itch and irritate and become, you know, obvious in the evenings, because those feelings, that's a symptom of blood flow, you know, oxygen, everything circulating to that area now to start to heal, right? To begin the healing process or amplify the healing process. So there are certain foods that are more contributory towards movement, you know, glycolytic movement, muscle contraction, ATP, those types of things, right? So the flex and movement of muscle, cognitive functioning. And then you have foods that are more contributory towards healing, breaking, you know, putting fascia back together again, developing scar tissue, helping the immune system, running the immune system, strengthening it, those types of things. So what this research is showing is that, and in this video with Thomas, he talks about how the mitochondria, the power plant, the part of the cell that gives us actual energy, it gives... the system life, how it's in the research that's being released, how it's showing that the mitochondria can't burn two substrates at the same time, meaning it can't burn two fuels simultaneously. All right, one of them gets burnt, the other one gets stored. I've been saying this for years to people, how, you know, when you look at these blue zones, these people that eat a lot of, these people that live abnormally long life expectancies in terms of centenarians, people that live over 100, people that live to 100 or over and are virtually disease free in terms of chronic illness and the stuff that we're rampant with right now. Well, the commonalities between these people is typically the fact that they don't combine a lot of protein with their carbohydrates, or carbohydrates with the protein. So you have cultures that eat quite a bit of fat and quite a bit of protein, and they don't eat a lot of refined carbohydrates. And then you have cultures that eat a lot of carbohydrates, rice and potato and things like that, starchy vegetables, but they eat very little when it comes to protein and even fats. So in this thing that Thomas was doing, and what he talks about, is how the mitochondria struggles to burn fat and carbohydrates at the same time, okay? because it's like pulling up to a gas station and dumping unleaded fuel and diesel fuel in the same gas tank and for the same engine. So if your engine is a typical, you know, fuel-burning engine, like a gasoline-burning engine, and you put in just regular test gasoline, it'll burn it. It'll use it. But if you put both gasoline and diesel in that, you know, that ethanol-burning, gasoline-burning engine, then you're going to have some problems. And what the human body does is it differentiates between the two, right? It'll store one and burn the other. So if you are carbohydrate-driven, meaning you've never really spent much time dieting, you've relied on exercise to lose your weight, you eat a lot of carbohydrates, you've never really, you know, you're part of the whole low-fat demographic, then your body is glycolytic. Your cells are aligned to burn carbs. So when you eat fatty carbohydrates, you know, which is basically a carbohydrate with fat, like a pizza, for example, your body is going to metabolize a carbohydrate, and then it's very likely to store the fat because it's not fat adapted. For those of you that have followed low carb lifestyles for quite a while, chances are now your body has become fat adapted. So when you introduce carbohydrates, chances are the carbohydrates are going to be stored because the body's cells, the mitochondria, are going to be geared towards that. So that being said, we can burn both, but just not simultaneously, right? It's called metabolic flexibility, is being able to be both fat and carbohydrate adapted. Now, the science is, it's extensive, and I'm going to keep this short. I don't want to bore you guys, and it's something that can't be taken in all at once. But we have seasons, we have, you know, the human body is not meant to burn just one substrate. So the zealots that are, you know, keto-based, and then we have the zealots that are carbohydrate, low-fat-based, they're both right. But the thing is like a lot of other things, including, you know, I might be stepping outside my pay grade here, but even religion, there's truth to all of it, right? It's just, it's basically stepping back and looking at the big picture, which is what insight is all about and what I've been doing over the last 20 plus years. So if we timed our food better, if we started to look at, okay, how does the body function? When are we moving around? When would it be best to burn, you know, glucose? Because again, the muscles aren't optimal at burning glucose or burning ketones. And that's a scientific fact. Our autonomic system, our organs and brain and central nervous system, things like that, things that aren't moving, things we don't have to think about, they're all really great at burning ketones. But when it comes to the muscle skeletal system, it sucks. So when are we using our muscle skeletal system, right? Or a skeletal muscle system, depending on how you want to say it, during the day when we're moving around. So again, like when we look at the body as a machine, almost like a car, you get up in the morning, and during the daytime when you're commuting or about, when you're out driving your vehicle, that's when you want the propulsion system to be fueled up. That's when you want the fuel. So that's where, you know, the plant-based nutrition, the carbohydrates, the starches, the fruit, things like that would come in really handy at that point of the day to keep you mobile so the muscles can contract. You've got glucose, you're cognitive, like the brain is thinking, you're processing information, short-term memory is there. All these things that are very, very important during daily functioning is all there. And it's not being impeded and disillusioned, I guess, for lack of a better term, with fats or excessive amounts of protein, right? There was a study that was done, and it was posted to nutritionfacts.org by Dr. Michael Greger regarding the usage, the application of protein with starch-based carbohydrates. It was basically rice and animal-based protein. And the two of them together showed that there was a massive synergy where it increased your insulin-like growth factor exponentially. In one of the studies, it claims it was like a 500% increase, because what was happening was typically in Asian food, or Chinese, this was done in China, not the China study by T. Colin Campbell, but this is another study that was being done and is still being done. Their protein intake, their animal protein intake has gone up, but their carbohydrate intake hasn't gone down. So they've added more protein to their carbohydrates because of the Western influence. And for a long time, the protein was being vilified, saying, okay, well, the protein causes insulin-like growth factor surges, which is, you know, increases probability of cancers and stuff like that. But then they started to notice that there was a massive surge in type 2 diabetes. So then they started looking at the rice. Okay, well, the rice is obviously causing type 2 diabetes because we all know that type 2 diabetes is brought about because of, you know, too much sugar intake, right? It's insulin resistance due to chronically elevated blood glucose. But, I mean, the Chinese people have been eating rice since they've been Chinese people. So why is it all of a sudden they've noticed, you know, a massive surge over the last 20 years in China? In the year 2000, they barely even showed up on the radar for diagnosis as type 2 diabetes. And then over the last 20 years, they've skyrocketed. And now they're only behind the U.S., the U.K., and Canada, and I think Australia. So they're diagnosing at 1 in every 8,000. And I believe in the U.S. it's 1 in every 7,000. I think that's the statistic. I could be wrong on that, but I know I'm close. But I know it's like a massive surge. So they did their studies and they looked into it, and they found that, you know, with rice, there wasn't that big of a surge of blood glucose, right? It was just an expected normal elevation, kind of like a gradual, you know, how everybody's talking about COVID and flatten the curve. It was a relatively mild curve. And the same when you introduced animal-based protein, there is a spike, a surge to blood glucose, but it's not an aggressive surge. It's, again, a curve even flatter than the rice. So the two of them separately are basically, you know, not threatening at all. They're beneficial. There's just enough insulin released to be able to unlock the cell and allow either one of those substrates to get into the cell, which is exactly what you want. It's like a key that opens the door. Now, what happens and what they've discovered is that when you add more protein to the rice, the animal-based protein to the rice specifically, it's like unlocking the door and one of them gets in but doesn't get a chance to close the door before the other one gets in. So you're slamming the cell full of proteins and carbohydrates. And ironically, protein and carbs burn very, very similar. Protein in the human body is the second best source of glucose. So what they noticed is that there was a massive surge in insulin, your insulin-like growth factor. Because of the two of them together, it's almost like mixing cleaning fluids. There was a synergistic effect, and it caused a lot of insulin. The body overreacted. I remember in 2007, I was competing as a bodybuilder, and I remember I was in my low-carb phase. We used to drop carbohydrates to deplete the muscle and then deplete our bodies of water, and then we'd load up and come into the show nice and tight. But I remember in that carbohydrate depletion phase, just at the very tail end of it, I was going to start my carb up. So carbohydrates draw water into the cell, which gives you that pumped look. It pulls the muscle, it expands the muscle and pulls the skin tighter. So that gives you that tight vascular look where you can see, you know, almost seem like you're inside out. But I remember eating a steak and potatoes. And when I got out to the parking lot, I couldn't even stand up. It was like I was drunk. It was like I was on acid. I was sweating profusely. I was shaking. My eyes, my pupils were dilated. I couldn't concentrate. It was a bad spot. And what happened was the synergy with the steak and the potato caused an overreaction of insulin, caused my body to dump too much insulin into the system, which basically took away all the blood glucose and dropped me low. I was effectively hypoglycemic. And I'd never experienced that before, but it's happened to me since then, on a few occasions, but, you know, purposefully, just me kind of, you know, testing stuff out. So that's what led me down this path in 2007, was thinking, okay, why did that happen? If those carbohydrates, there are more than enough carbohydrates to sustain my blood sugar, I'm not diabetic or pre-diabetic, I have no blood glucose issues. So what's happening here? And that's what led me to this. And now the information is starting to come down the pipe because people are starting to notice it. And it's been because of the low carb, like Dr. Atkins brought more information to the forefront regarding insulin and how the body uses it and than any other, you know, person that I can think of. So, you know, these developments, these polar opposite ways of eating have really gotten to a point now where we're starting to see a connection. It's almost like quantum, the quantum sciences and religion starting to actually explain one another, right? So anyway, where I'm getting at is if we can learn how to introduce, separate and introduce these substrates, proteins, fats, and carbohydrates into the body properly, we're going to get better absorption. We get better absorption, we're not going to have malnutrition. Okay. It's that easy. What's happened is because we're privy to so much food, we've got so much available to us. And at any point, what's happening is that the body is just, it's confused. We have so much fuel available to us that the body is, it's storing more than it's burning. It's becoming inefficient because of the way that we're introducing it is inefficient, right? So if you introduce the food better, if I introduce the information better, chances are you would understand it better. So you would get more comprehension. So again, we're going back to what I said earlier, the body's just not comprehending the nutrients because we're not giving it to the body at the appropriate time when the body can optimally absorb it. We blame the food, we blame the soil, we blame all this stuff. But really, I think at this day and age, heading into 2021, we need to start thinking about, okay, you know, we can't change the environment. The soil is the way it is. We've done, you know, this damage, but how can we mitigate it right now? Like, what can we do that'll up not the world outside us, but what can we do to enhance ourselves so that we're pulling more nutrition from maybe a food that has less nutrition to it? So again, instead of, like, imagine speaking to someone or someone speaking to you with broken English, right? You can still comprehend the conversation. The person speaks with an accent. You sit there and you listen and you're focused and you're absorbing the information. Eventually, the accent doesn't become such a big hindrance. You actually really understand because you're starting to see the bigger picture. You're pulling more information from it. So it's like our food right now has an accent. The body's having a difficult time understanding it because it's refined, because there's, you know, it's been altered in some way. So it's having a difficult time understanding the food. But the thing is that if we calm down and we get rid of all the surrounding noises, we focus better on the food, then all of a sudden the food has more for us because we're taking in more. All right, I hope you guys understand. So knowing when your body is ready to take those foods in is a big part of the comprehension of it. Okay, so what we're hitting on right now is nutrient timing and combining. All right, so the time of the day that you eat your food, the combination of the foods that you're eating at one time can be very beneficial or detrimental to the way that your body uses them. All right, carbohydrates and fats, when you think about it, all right, and I'm going to be ending this very shortly, but when you think about it, what in nature has a carbohydrate and a fat, right? If you were to pull it from a tree, pull it from the ground, pull it from a vine, what can you name right off the top of your head that has both significant amounts now? I mean, there's trace amounts in that, but significant amounts of both both fat and carbohydrates. Okay, an avocado is a fruit, but an avocado has very low carbohydrates and it has high fat. A banana is a fruit. A banana has high carbohydrates and very low fat. It's like, it's almost, right? You see where I'm getting at? Nature doesn't provide two fuels in one element, in one item. Nuts have high fat, low carbohydrates, right? So those are like just a few piddly examples, but you get my drift. The body is not meant to eat, and or sorry, we are not meant to eat a plate full of variety of foods. We're the only creature in God's green earth that does that. You never, never. I mean, you can watch whatever animal channel or whatever's on TV. You could search it. You could Google it. Try and find an animal that stuffs a bunch of different substrates on their plate, right? All at one time and eats it all at one time. It just doesn't exist. They'll even omnivorous animals like, you know, primates, chimpanzees, gorillas, things like that. They don't mix their food together all at once. They'll eat, you know, a herbivorous meal, or they'll eat a carnivorous meal. A lion, again, a carnivore, you know, won't go and kill a gazelle and then go out and you know, get some grain or some salad or something like that to put on the side of it. So we really need to start thinking a little bit more clearly. And it, in actuality, it's very simple. By eating a high carbohydrate, low fat, and then a higher fat, animal-based meal separately from each other, instead of putting it all in the same plate, when you think about it, it could really enhance the body's ability to use both of them, and you may need less of them because you're getting better absorption, right? If you are understanding someone, they have to say less because, oh, I get it, I understand you. They don't have to explain again and again and again. So imagine getting to a phase, and we all know it's possible with all this research and intermittent fasting. Imagine getting into a phase, into a stage where you're getting more quality from your food and you need less quantity. So you actually reduce your calorie intake, but you're getting more yield from the calories that you're taking in because you're communicating them better. All right? This is where insight is. This is what we're thinking about. This is what I'm trying to get on the table. This is why we have a podcast. This is why we, you know, goof around and talk, but it's more or less just to get you to see the depth of experience that I have in this field and the time and energy that I put into just sitting back and observing. And I'm at a very dangerous point in my career where I realize I don't know anything. I don't have any answers. All I have is observation. And I've spent so long with so many people that I'd really challenge anybody as to how many people that they've been able to sit with on an intimate basis, one-on-one, talking with them and pulling this data, this evidence, this material, this information, this experience, this insight, and be able to take a look at it and lay it all out like puzzle pieces, and then start to put it together and actually see a picture there with all of the pieces, right? With no agenda other than the fact that how can we get the food that we have available to us in our environment? How do we get it into us so that the body can use more of it? When obesity is a side effect, it's a symptom of malnutrition. When we're dying from diseases of malnutrition, when our cells are breaking down because they're not getting the nutrients that they need in order to be healthy and withstand the barrage of the environment around us, why are we not learning to adapt? Why are we not using our food in a better way, right? And it just doesn't make sense, right? When you look at it, we would still be using horse and buggy because horse and buggy got us from point A to point B. Why did we ever make the car? If horse and buggy got us from point A to point B, why didn't we just, you know, say, okay, we did it, that's it, right? We need to start looking at the way that we're introducing our foods based on what it is that our needs are today. Our body is really overwhelmed. We've evolved so quickly in such a short period of time in regards to our environment that our body is struggling to keep up. So it's like me in grade 12 advanced math. I was lost. I didn't know my ass from my elbow. I jumped in way over my head. But if I had taken the necessary steps and if I had better teachers, right, both of those combined, who knows where or what I would be today. Okay? So it's the same, everybody. We're not going to change the food sources. We can't. It's not us. That's the environment. That's what the world is dictating. That's what is putting us and putting in front of us. Our job is to take what it puts in front of us and find a way of using that optimally so that we can develop ourselves, we can evolve to the point where we overcome our environment. It's not about changing the environment, it's about overcoming the environment. And there's ways out there that we can do this. And it's very cool and it's very uncomplicated. The body's done all the complicated work for us. All we have to do is listen to it, have a conversation, understand it a little bit more instead of dictate to it. You need to eat this. This is bad. This is good. But again, the science is solid on both sides, right? It's how do we merge the two together and how do we involve the science of the body instead of the science of the food? Remember, the food was there before we existed. We've evolved through symbiotic evolution to be able to digest the food and extract the nutrients from it. That's what allowed us to survive. That's why I'm here today. Is my ancestors a millennia or two ago actually evolved to be able to use the food, right? They evolved using the food. So it's a symbiotic evolution. When we started to eat other animals, we ended up with bigger brains and we stood stronger and taller. And it was that demographic that evolved, right? So we do have tendencies for both. We are omnivorous. We've got the capacity for carnivorism, and we have the capacity for being herbivore. So why are we constantly jumping from one side to the other, saying one is wrong, one is right? Why aren't we, you know, looking at the big picture and saying, you know what, they're both right. Now let's figure out how to introduce them together. And from what I've seen and from the research that is coming, we're going to be blown back by all of this. And it's going to open a whole new realm in regards to, okay, now we can stop this bullshit fighting back and forth. And, you know, it's like Twilight. You know, who are you, Team Jacob or Team whatever the vampire's name was? It's ridiculous and it's juvenile. It's a bunch of people trying to, you know, posture and tell everybody how much they know and trying to prove to us that they're right. And somewhere in amongst that, the health has gotten lost. So this is something that I want you guys to think about. Everybody is listening. If you have more questions, you guys know where to find me. All right. Neil Burchill, Facebook page, Insight Health and Fitness, Insight Facebook page. Our landing page is insighthf.com. But I'm going to be speaking on this again because this is coming. There's nothing we can do to stop it. The cat is out of the bag. People are going to be talking about this. There's going to be symposiums and lectures and, you know, bandwagon jumpers and things like this. But I want everybody listening to this podcast to understand where they heard it first, okay? This is putting the dots together. Steve Jobs said it the absolute best, is you cannot connect the dots by looking forward. You can only connect the dots by looking backwards. So out of the tens of thousands of people that I've worked with over the 20 years that I've been doing this, I've been looking back and I've been collecting metadata and I've been connecting those dots, and those dots are showing me that, yes, at the end of the day, we need a certain amount of macronutrients, both proteins, fats, and carbohydrates and water, all right? That's it. Mic drop, bottom line. There are tools and applications where we reduce carbohydrates or reduce fats that can bring about certain benefits to the individual, but none of them are long-term. We've proven that with these fad diets, both ketogenic and low fat. We can't sustain that. You can't stay that. There's a 97% failure rate on all fronts of people putting their weight back on or getting their illnesses back because they can't sustain that dieting. So what is it that we're doing wrong? And the thing is we're pulling out a substrate that is indigenous to us, that is native to us as human beings. You can go in the middle of nowhere out in the South Pole and you can come across an Aboriginal population of Inuit and you can do a saliva test to determine whether or not they have an enzyme that breaks down carbohydrates, salivatory amylase. These Aboriginal populations have this amylase, all right, salivatory amylase. Because at some point, they would have consumed, or they did consume carbohydrates, and the body was able to convert the carbohydrates into fuel and to run the body into glucose. All right. Even though it might have been generations where they actually had a carbohydrate, because they only lived on whale blubber and some kelp and, you know, a protein-rich diet of, you know, other fish and things like this. So where would they get a significant amount of carbohydrates from? And it, right, they don't. They're basically ketogenic. But the thing is that at some point during their evolution, they did have carbohydrates, and the body still has the capacity, although diminished, it still has a capacity to break the carbohydrates down, right? So if these substrates are human substrates, they're there, and we are a hybrid machine, limiting to one or the other can be very detrimental to our optimal performance. We are meant to be hybrids. We are meant to be metabolically flexible. We are meant to burn fat when we need to burn fat, when the system feels it necessary to do so and it's beneficial to our health. And we're meant to burn carbohydrates when it's beneficial to our health as well. And to balance those carbohydrate-driven systems and the fat or, the fat-driven systems. Okay, we have them both. Some of them are ambidextrous, they can run on both, but a lot are not. Some of them are designed specifically for glycolysis, and some of them are specifically for fat metabolization. So anyway, that's the skinny on this. Pardon the pun. I didn't want to go too long, but I hope you gathered a lot of insight and got some information, and I hope you're scratching the shit out of your heads right now and thinking, what just happened? What is Neil saying? What is Insight doing? Where are we going with this? Because this, guys, it's evolutionary. It is groundbreaking. It is massive, and it's about time that I let the cat out of the bag. I don't need to jam it down your throats, guys. It's coming. And there's going to be a lot of knucklehead celebrities out there that are going to want to make a fortune off of this. It's going to be the next, you know, shirtless, tattooed guy on your social media feed saying that he's got the answers and this is what you got to do. Or it's going to be the, you know, whatever Lululemon up woman who's, you know, got all the answers for you. It's coming. And if you guys don't grab a hold of this now, you're going to be overwhelmed and you're going to be oversold, and they're going to make it as complicated as they can so that they create the dependencies that they do. All right. They did it with intermittent fasting. They did it with ketosis. They did it with low fat. They're going to do it with this, but you guys have a chance to really kind of understand it at a different level so that you can't be sold. You can't be, trended. Okay. This is real. This is coming. This is going to reduce heart disease, diabetes, cancer, even because of the way that it's going to calm down those internal workings of the body, the biochemistry, which is going to affect development of cells and neurochemistry as well. The reaches of something like this are absolutely profound. And weight, I mean, why would your body store something that it can use? Your body only stores what it cannot use. I need you to understand that. It can only store what it cannot use, right? You only put shit in the catch-all drawer that you don't use. You only put tools and household items in the back shed that you don't use, okay? The stuff that you use is out and it's being used. It's functional, it's there. It's used every day or at multiple times, right? It's not cluttering up and you're not tripping over it. Our bodies, we're not using what we're consuming, and it's being stored. It's being stored in the sock drawer, the catch-all drawer. It's being stored in the upper cabinets. It's being stored under the rug. It's being stored in the back dirty shed, right? And we're proof of it. We've got more storage than we know what to do with. Why? Because we're not using the food. Why aren't we using the food? Well, we've blamed it on the food for the last 50 years. Nothing's changed. So maybe we need to start taking a little bit of the ownership here and thinking, okay, how can I use the food better? And stop thinking cutting out. Stop cutting shit out of your diet. We're starving to death with obesity. Stop cutting stuff out of your diet. All right, start learning how to use it better. It's not the knife that hurts people. It's the idiot using it, right? a knife can save a person's life or it can take a person's life, depending on the intent and skill that it's used. Okay? So I'm going to end off with that. You guys scratch your head. You know where to find me. This is what happens when you let me go solo. If you don't have Greg to throw a joke in every now and again, or Stoic Joel to stop one of my rants. So I hope you guys found this interesting, and I hope that you seriously consider this, and I hope that whoever's listening, I hope you find me, and I hope that at some point we can have some type of conversation, or we can continue this so that you, you're ready for this. 2021, guys, it's earlier than I thought it would be. I was thinking maybe 5 years from when I started to talk about it in 2000 and it was 2017. So anyway, but it's here now, so let's roll with it, all right? Like back when I was a kid, G.I. Joe the cartoon, for those of you out there that are listening that are my age and we're into that. There's a thing at the end of every cartoon, there was a learning moment where, you know, one of the G.I. Joe characters would, you know, talk to a kid about staying safe around lawn apparatus or whatever, right? And they always used to end it up with saying, knowing is half the battle, all right? And as an adult now at 46 years, it's the truth. Knowing is half the battle, but it's only half the battle. The other half is applying, all right? So knowing without application is utterly useless, all right? So that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back at you again next week with the Four Amigos. And anyway, I hope you're all having a great summer. Take care, and please keep listening.